As we begin this morning once more, I want to begin by sharing with you man's wisdom for whatever it's worth. This from Sweden, good financial principle here. If you buy what you don't need, you steal from yourself. Wow, one look at our checkbooks and that proverb. What thieves it probably makes of us all, right? From the Swedish today, don't buy what you really don't need. If you don't need another gun, Marshall, don't buy one. If you don't need another chicken, Joe, don't tell your pastor to go buy more. Don't buy what you really don't need. Don't steal from yourself. It's an interesting thought, isn't it? Good thought. And this then from Denmark, life is unpredictable, so eat your cake first. That's really good. Shame on any parent that ever told their kids no dessert until dinner was finished, denying completely the unpredictability of life. And that's just not right. Life is unpredictable. This morning from the Danish, you have permission to go to the restaurant and eat dessert before anything else. Proverbs 22 and verse 1. You have there in your notes from verse 1, wisdom's word, choose a good name. Proverbs 22 and verse 1 from the Living Bible. If you must choose, take a good name rather than great riches. For to be held in loving esteem is better than silver, and it's better than gold. This is true. Our reputations, our names matter. This is also true. It can take years and years to build a good reputation and to make for yourself a good name. And it can take one moment, one decision to ruin and to destroy that good reputation and that good name. This also is true. Once damaged, our reputations can be hard to restore. Prioritize then in your life and for your life a good name, even over and above great riches, silver, and even gold. This is wisdom's word. Value must be placed not in what you have, but rather in who you are and what you're becoming. Can I ask you this morning? Who are you? Culture would tell you that you can impress me by telling me what you have. Wisdom doesn't ask you, though, what you have. Wisdom asks you who you are. Are you a person of integrity? Are you a person of honesty? Are you a person who speaks words of life, or are you a person who speaks words of death? Who are you? Maybe better still, the question, what are you becoming? Can I ask you this morning, on what do you place the emphasis? On what do you make a priority? Do you spend more time considering what you have, the money in your bank, more that than the question of who you are, who you're becoming? Do you spend more time on the stuff in your house and having more stuff in your house, having nicer, newer stuff in your house, having more of a house? You spend more time, wishes and dreams. If only I had this, if only I had more of that. Do you spend more time on that than you do on asking of yourself, who am I and what am I becoming? And I ask you this morning, are you consumed by what you have, what you want, what you feel would make life better for you? Or are you consumed by having a good name, wisdom's word, which is of far greater value than anything else? Scripture helps us in choosing a good name and protecting a good name. Think of all that we've considered thus far in Proverbs. How about this for the best advice, maybe? Guard your heart. Nothing like garbage in your heart that will filter out into your life and ruin your good name. How about a summation of sorts for Proverbs? Live wisely, walk wisdom's path. Nothing like the fool's way. Just a reminder, the real word of Scripture is the word that we use to get our word moron. Nothing like the moron's way that will make a fool of you and ruin your reputation and your good name. That's where the foolish decision leads you. Live wisely then. In the New Testament, the wisdom of God is Jesus. How about this then? Be like Jesus. Follow in his steps. There's nothing like Jesus in his way that will get for you a good name and a good reputation and help you to protect it as well. Following always and only Jesus's way will always protect you and your name. Be more concerned with who you are and what you're becoming than what you have. What you are, what you're becoming, your name, your reputation is of far greater worth. It's of far greater value than anything you could ever have. And can I push even a bit further in this? You know, as children of God, we call ourselves Christians. We have taken on his name. Can I remind you, can I let you to know this morning, I believe it's true, when you ruin your name, in effect, you really end up ruining his name. I like this story. An honest and kind man drove the streets of San Francisco for more than an hour to find the woman who had left her purse with $1,792 in cash on the back seat of his cab. I like what he said when some of his drivers ridiculed him for not pocketing the money. It was cash, after all. His response, "I am a card-carrying member of the Christian faith, and what good is it to go to church if you don't practice what you preach?" In the end, we seek a good name, no matter the alternative. $1,792, even in cash, does not compare to a good name and to a good reputation. Even, in fact, not just for the primary purpose of honoring ourselves. We seek the good name. We seek the good reputation so that Christ in us might be honored, might be glorified. His, after all, is the name that is above every other name. Choose a good name. Protect the good name. Because in it, through it, your good name, he can and he will be exalted and glorified. Choose a good name. Protect the good name. Because in it and through it, his good name, his name above all name, will be exalted in you and through you. Proverbs 22 and verse 3 in your notes, wisdom's word, see the danger ahead so that you can avoid it. See the danger ahead so that you can stay away from it. See the trouble ahead so that you can avoid the trouble to come. Consider where you're going. Consider carefully what you're doing. Don't get caught up in the moment. Consider the outcome. Consider the potential danger, the ruin that can result from the way that you're taken. Consider carefully the final destination. In an airport, there are many boarding gates. There are many planes. But if you're at the airport, you only want the one. The one that's taking you wherever you've decided to go, wherever you want to go. Life can be like that. Many decisions. Many choices, even many opportunities. Wisdom's word, the prudent man, verse 3 of chapter 22, the prudent man considers not just the moment, but the final destination. I don't want to make just any decision. I don't want to flippantly jump into just any opportunity because some of them lead to death. Some of them lead to ruin and danger. Some of them are not for me. The ticket God has issued to me does not take me there. Scripture is clear. There's God's way. There's the way of righteousness. And then there's the way of wickedness. And listen to me. One leads you to danger, no doubt about it. To be prudent, to be wise, is to see the danger and take refuge from that. Run from that. Have nothing to do with that wicked way. The other, the way of righteousness, leads you to life and joy and peace in the Lord. Proverbs has been very clear. A good bit of life's choices can be simplified. There's wisdom's way, and then there's folly's way. Sometimes wisdom's way can be hard. Wisdom's way demands that you don't just do whatever you want to do, what you feel like doing. Rather, you do what's wise and what's right. Folly, oh, it's a free-for-all. You want to do it? Do it. You want to say it? Say it. No restraint, no regard for others or the outcome. Like a bull in a china shop, leaving a wake of disaster and destruction wherever it goes. But in the beginning, folly, oh, how entertaining and fun and easy it would appear to be. Wisdom's word, the prudent, the wise, they see the danger that's coming and they get off that path. The prudent one walks in wisdom and always considers not just the moment, but the result of the moment. In verse 5, in the paths of the wicked lie thorns and snares, but he who guards his soul does what? Stays away from that, hides from that, runs from that. See the danger in folly's way, in sin, in wickedness. Stay off then that way. Stay out of the trouble. Stay away from that that would bring you to ruin. See it for what it is. Walk the way of wisdom and righteousness instead. Walk in the Lord's way. Let the Lord lead you in his way. At the end, the final destination of his way is life. I like this from the Contemporary English Version, Proverbs 22 and verse 3. When you see trouble coming, don't be stupid and walk right into it. Be smart and hide. The prudent and the wise, they see the trouble coming. They see the danger ahead. And so they don't go that way. They avoid it, hide from it, make a quick U-turn to get off that way. So this morning, the encouragement, wisdom's word, be prudent, be wise, so that you might do like that. Can I ask you this morning, decisions that you're making right now in life, as enjoyable, as pleasant, even as right as they would appear to be, make you feel good, make you to think it's what's best for me, it's what I need to do, this is what I got to do. But can I ask you this morning, where is it taking you? Are you able to see down the road? Because we understand the pleasure of a moment can turn to a life of destruction and death and ruin if we get off of wisdom's path. I'm speaking to Christians in the room. Listen to me, brothers and sisters. It's easy for us to get caught up in the moment. Oh, this feels right. It must be right. This feels good. It must be good. This is what I do. This is what I want to do. This is what I need to do. And the next thing we do, we find ourselves at the dead end of death, destruction, and ruin. And everything in our lives is falling apart and can all be traced back. That moment, we decided to do the easy thing. We decided to go our way. We didn't see the end of destruction. We didn't see the end of brokenness. We didn't see the end of regret and shame. And we made our decision then, and it led us to the path that brought us to here. And now, what do we end up doing? We spend all of our time and energy in life just trying to get back. If I could just get back to where there was before the regret and before everything was broken and before everything was messed up. If I could go back and make things right, I'll try to make things right. I'll try to do better. And in the meantime, we have a wake of destruction behind us. The wise, the prudent, they're able to see now where the path is going. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to go there. I don't care how right it feels. I don't care how good it feels. I don't care who's telling me to say that, do that, go that way. I choose wisdom's way and to run from the pathway, to hide from the pathway that would lead me to destruction and bring me to trouble. Verse 4, in your notes, wisdom's word, live humbly and fear the Lord. It's almost of sorts become our weekly reminder. In all our talk of wisdom, we return to the beginning. And for us to remember this, it's the fear of the Lord that's the beginning of wisdom. We've talked a lot about Proverbs. Wisdom's how you talk. Wisdom's how you treat the poor. Wisdom's how you do life. Wisdom's how you respond in turmoil and difficulty. Wisdom's how you promote peace instead of anger and animosity. All of these things that would define wisdom. But this morning, once more, a return back to the beginning, which is the reminder. But the beginning of wisdom is learning what it is to fear the Lord, to live in reverential awe of Him. Remove Jesus from the equation. Remove the fear of God from the equation. And no matter Proverbs or any other study or any other book, wisdom will elude you. You will continually and even forever live the fool's life. So fear the Lord. Honor Him. Live ever in the awareness of His greatness and His holiness, His power, His majesty, His glory. Live your life, everything you do, everything you say, as always and only expression of worship to Him. And all you do and say, do it as unto the Lord. Say it as unto the Lord. Do it for the glory of the Lord. Say it for the glory of the Lord. That's the fear of God. And that's where wisdom begins. And not just that, we walk humbly before the Lord and we live in humility before others. That's wisdom's way. Pride and selfishness, it's foolishness. May we never forget it. Pride is foolishness. Pride is folly's way. A disregard for others consumed by self, foolishness. Folly's way. We humble ourselves even like Jesus did. We consider others above ourselves. We honor one another. We submit ourselves to one another. We live our lives for the good of others. That's wisdom's way. Unless you forget the last point, think that's too hard to pursue and too difficult to live, consider the end. Humility and the fear of the Lord, Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 4, you can see it. Where does it lead us? What's the final destination of living in humility and fear of the Lord? It's honor and it's life and it's even wealth. Back to our earlier illustration. Listen, you want to be on that plane. You want to get to that final destination. You want the ticket that takes you to those things. Wisdom's word, humility, fear of the Lord. That's how we get to honor and to life and to wealth. Verse 6, training and disciplining your children will be good for them and you. Train up a child in the way they should go. In verse 15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. My study Bible includes this as a comment. The training, the disciplining is done so that our children might devote themselves to the Lord, to His way, to wisdom's way. That they might see the danger and the trouble of sin and foolishness. That they might hide from that. Avoid at all costs the paths and the decisions that take them there. The training and the disciplining is done so that we might cultivate within our children a heart for God, a taste for God, that they themselves might taste and see that He is good. Probably here it's a good reminder for us. Remember, Proverbs are not promises, but rather probabilities. The reality, there are many parents who train their children right and in the right way, only to watch them in life choose the way of foolishness and sin and rebellion. And yet I don't think that needs to diminish in any way what we read here. We considered it already, in fact, in Proverbs, to withhold discipline, to not train up in the right way, in the good way. That's unacceptable. From Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 18, discipline your son, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to his death. So not the promise, but the two probabilities. Send them along on the pathway of foolishness. Be a willing party to their demise, to their ruin, to their destruction. Or train up a child in the way they should go. Teach, discipline, so that the foolishness would be gone and that they would begin on the right way and even to not depart from that. That's good for them. And Proverbs makes clear it's good for us. Look at in verse 13, do not withhold discipline. Verse 13 of chapter 23, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he'll not die. I like the thought of that. Many parents get intimidated by the thought of discipline. I want my child to love me. I want my child to value. I don't want them angry. One author says this, your primary concern is not what they think of you now, but what they'll think 20 years from now. That's the reason for discipline. That's the reason for the training. Willing to endure a child's anger. You know, even Scripture reveals to us, it doesn't matter, grown folks or children, discipline is never pleasant in the moment. Your children are not going to enjoy the discipline and the training, and they're probably going to let you to know it. But it's good for them. I like what Mark Twain is attributed with a quote, supposedly having said, when I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished how much the old man had learned in 7 years. Isn't that true? Don't all of us know that? We go through the progression and the stages when we're teenagers. Our parents know nothing, but it's not long when we get out on our own and we begin to realize, wow, my parents really knew what they were doing. My parents really had it all together. My parents really did good for me. Denny's soon to go off to college. We can't wait till we get the phone call. Dad, wow, you're awesome. Wow, you have learned a lot. These 3 months that I've been away at school, Dad, you have learned so much. It's true, isn't it? We don't worry about the discipline and the unpleasantness of it and the child letting us know the words of anger and attitudes of it. We know the end is good. Okay, verse 13. So don't withhold. Watch this. Verse 14. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death. So the training, the disciplining is what? It's good for them. Saves them from death. But look at verse 15. My son, if your heart is wise, then my heart will be glad. My inmost being, verse 16, will rejoice. Verse 24. The father of a righteous man has great joy. He delights in the wise son. Verse 25, may your father and mother be glad, and may she who gave you birth rejoice. You'll not regret one moment of discipline, not the teaching, not the training, not at all, not ever, when you see the end result. When you're able to rejoice and be glad and delight in a son and a daughter that's wise and that's walking in wisdom's way. The Message puts it this way, Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Point your kids in the right direction. When they're old, they won't be lost. And can I leave you with just this last thought as well? Certainly the context is dad and mom, how we would treat our children, even as grandparents, how we would treat our grandchildren. But can I let you to know here that though we might be full grown in life, we are still children of God. And that, in light of these verses that we've just read, would seem to mean this: the training, the disciplining, it's good for you and it's good for me. As my children need it from me, their earthly father, so I need it. We need the discipline. We need the training from our heavenly father. Don't despise the season of training you might be in, even the moments of discipline that you might find yourself in. Verse 7, we'll try to hustle this morning. In your notes, don't be a slave to debt. Borrowing makes a servant out of you. Wisdom says so. Makes a slave out of you. Freedom is where we want to live. Listen, let's not miss the point. Freedom in everything. Freedom from every bondage, freedom from every addiction, freedom. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And the Spirit of the Lord lives in you so that in you, in every area of your life, there ought to be freedom. Freedom is what you should live in. freedom from sin, freedom from bondage, freedom from addiction, yes, yes, and yes, but also freedom from the enslavement of debt. My study Bible adds this: those who live beyond their means end up enslaved to their creditors. Don't let yourself be enslaved to anything, not to the devil, not to the bank, not to the credit card. Be careful that you don't live beyond your means. Be careful, the simplicity, that you don't spend more than you make. It's going to be enjoyable. It's going to be fun. It's going to enslave you in the end. My question, very practical, are you enslaved to the lender? What plan do you have to get out of that? To get out of debt so that you can live in freedom. Have a plan to free yourself from the lender that you are maybe indebted to. Proverbs 22 and verse 9, be generous, especially to the poor. Generosity results in blessing. Live generously, always. That's scriptural truth. You sow generously, you will reap generously. Generosity is good and is a good character trait to possess. Look at it in chapter 23 and verse 6. Do not eat the food of a stingy man. Verse 7, for he's the kind of man who's always thinking about the cost. Eat and drink, he says, but his heart's not with you. Verse 8, you'll vomit up what little you've eaten and will have wasted your compliments. Definitely my own paraphrase, but stinginess in you will make others around you want to vomit. But generosity from you, evidenced in your life, you always thinking about how you can give and how you can help and how you can serve, that will make you to be blessed and will make others to consider of you a blessing to them. It'll make others to thank God for the blessing that is my brother and my sister, who is so generous with the words of life, who's so generous with the kind act, who's so generous with the card of encouragement, who's so generous with the time to let me vent and rant and rave for an hour of the trouble at work or the trouble at home or my spiritual problem or how I miss. I am so thankful, God, for the blessing of the brother, the sister that's been so generous to me. Again, my paraphrase. You can live to make others vomit or to thank God for the blessing you are. Stinginess, generosity. Live generously. Be generous. And we don't neglect it. We don't miss it here. You see it in verse 9 as clearly as I do. We're to be generous to the poor. God is always, has always, will always be for the poor, the widowed, the orphaned. Be careful how you treat them. Look at it in chapter 22 and verse 22. Don't exploit them. Don't crush the needy in court. In verse 16, he who oppresses the poor to increase his wealth will come to poverty himself. In verse 23, for the Lord will take up their case and will plunder those who plundered them. In chapter 23 and verse 10, don't move an ancient boundary stone or encroach on the... Don't cheat the fatherless, for their defender is strong. And he'll take up their case. Be careful how you treat the poor. You put yourself against them, and you end up ultimately putting yourself against God. Don't do that. Be generous. Live generously. Help, serve, protect. Do all that you can for them. I don't know what opportunity that you have to bless the poor, to love the poor. We've mentioned this before. Remember, poverty doesn't just have to be a money thing. You don't just have to think, who do I need to give some money to? Or who do I need to give some groceries? There's a poverty for those that are discouraged. There's a poverty. There's a lack of encouragement. So you who are rich in courage can give encouragement to those who are poor in it. There's many ways that we can do that. I know that this right here provides an opportunity to do that. But I want to encourage you. You might think there's little opportunity. Can I ask of you? Can I encourage you? Go find it. If you don't know how you can ever live this out, Pastor, I just don't know who the poor are. Go find them. Today was our $1 benevolence offering to the outreach center that is literally 5 minutes that way. Go there. What can I do to help? What can I do to serve? The Lord has put within my heart a passion for the poor. I'm compelled to do something. Take a drive just across the highway. It won't take you 10 or 15 minutes. And trust me, you won't have to look far. You'll see opportunity after opportunity to help. If you don't know how you can, go find a way that you can. Love on, bless, protect. Go find the widowed. Go find the orphan. Go find the poor and love on them and find ways to be generous to them. Quickly this morning, verse 13, creative excuses for a lack of work is a sign of laziness. The sluggard says, the sluggard, the lazy person, the slacker, I can't go work. There might be a lion out there ready to pounce on me. I'll be murdered in the streets. I can't go to work today. I can't make it. I'll die if I make the trip. The lazy are good with excuses. Be careful of being good with excuses. I was thinking of it. We've talked this way before. Thieves who know how to hack the internet. How in the world do you do that? Who knows how to do that? Come up with the most creative schemes and scams to get your money. And we've said things like this, haven't we? Would but that they could use that ingenuity for good. How wealthy they surely would be in real work, in legal work. I was thinking along the same lines, if the lazy could use the energy they expend on such good and creative excuses, well, they wouldn't be lazy anymore, would they? So, just an encouragement for you. Be careful with the excuses. Maybe an indicator of your laziness. I'm going to push here this morning. Might be a good time for you to plug your ears or watch your toes. I'm likely to step on some. Be careful of how good you are in making spiritual excuses. Well, Pastor, I didn't read my Bible because, and wow, how good and how quick you are with an answer. But Pastor, I didn't pray this week because, and there you go with the most amazing Hollywood-esque creativity in that excuse for why you had no time for the Bible and you had no time for prayer. Be careful with the excuses why you couldn't be here last Sunday. Well, Pastor, you see, what happened was why you didn't come on Wednesday, why you can't make it to Sunday night prayer, why you can't help out at the church, not in the work, not in the ministry. Be careful of how good you are in making excuses, even especially the spiritual ones. They might just simply serve to reveal a laziness in you that needs to be addressed. Verse 17, listen to wisdom and be wise. Wisdom's word, listen to me. Listen to wisdom, be wise. Verse 24, choose your friends wisely. You will become like them. You will. It's impossible for it to be different. Who your friends are, it will rub off on you. You will begin to take on those traits. So be careful of the company you keep. In light of verse 24 and 25, especially be careful of those who are inclined towards anger. Be careful of befriending the hot-tempered one, because you may very well become hot-tempered yourself. Verse 26 and really all the way through 29, I'm going to give it to you in reverse. Verse 29, do you see a man skilled in his work? So here you go. Be good at what you do. Be the best at what you do. What do? I work here. I work there. Be good at that. Be the best at that. Verse 28, do not remove an ancient boundary stone. Again, that's to be honest. Be a person of integrity in all your dealings, all your relationships. Verse 26, do not be a man who strikes hands in a pledge. Be careful. Be careful how you commit yourself to someone else and become dependent on them. We're finished quickly. Verse 4, show restraint. Show restraint. Verse 17, do not envy the sinner nor the sinful. I was thinking of that even in my own life. How it can be so easy. I'm ashamed to say it. Please don't misunderstand. How it can be so easy to envy the sinful and even the sinner. They seem to get everything their own way. They seem to be able to live without restraint and not suffer the consequences for it. Seem to not be consumed with making sure to do right and say right and think right. Let me just read this to you quickly and we'll wrap up. When we see the wicked prosper, we're apt to envy them. When we hear the noise of their mirth and our own spirit is heavy, we half think that they have the best of it. This is foolish and sinful. If we knew them better, and especially if we remembered their end, we should pity them. The cure for envy lies in living under a constant sense of the divine presence, worshiping God and communing with Him all day long, however long the day may seem. True religion lifts the soul into a higher region where the judgment becomes more clear and the desires are more elevated. The more of heaven there is in our lives, the less of earth we shall covet. How about that? If there's an inclination to envy the sinful or the sinner, it might just be that there's more of this earth in your heart than there is of heaven in your heart. The fear of God casts out the envy of men. The death blow of envy is a calm consideration of the future. The wealth and glory of the ungodly are a vain show. This pompous appearance flashes out for an hour and then is extinguished. What is the prosperous sinner the better for his prosperity when judgment overtakes him? As for the godly man, his end is peace and blessedness, and none can rob him of his joy. Wherefore, let him forego envy and be filled with sweet content. Finally, verse 20 of chapter 23, and really the remainder when you jump to 29, avoid the intoxicating drink. Wisdom's word. My study Bible says this, continued use of fermented wine can bite like a poisonous snake or viper. This metaphor indicates that the effects of alcohol can be demonic and destructive, resulting in physical ailments, blurred vision, a confused mind, twisted judgment, a loose tongue. Too often, the one who drinks will seek more until he or she can no longer control the drinking. The only way to be sure one will not end up this way is to avoid all intoxicating beverages. Beware of those who contend that drinking with self-control and moderation is without danger. Alcohol leads to a decreased capacity for control. It's a weakening of inhibitions, a disdaining of prudent behavior and righteous values. Contributes to disturbances, conflicts, violence in family and in society. One pastor, when asked to address the alcohol issue as it relates to the church, and again, we mentioned this last week in light of drunkenness versus drink, and the pastor's comment was, I'll simply say this, I never sat down with a couple who told me that alcohol saved their marriage, but I've sat with many a couple who told to me how alcohol destroyed their marriage. Again, the immediate response of so many of us, I would never do that. I would never let that to happen. I mentioned it to you last week. There have been many a men and women smarter than us, wiser than us, more spiritual than us, who said the same thing, but became entrapped by alcohol's allure, became captive to it all, became foolish and how they did and how they lived. Alcohol is associated with inefficiency and poverty and injustice. Our culture celebrates it, considers it even a real and vital part of true Americana, if you will. The beer for the game, the wine at dinner and to wind down. Listen to me, wisdom's word. You're better off having nothing to do with it. You're better off avoiding. You will save yourself even the potential for alcohol's destruction if you stay completely away. For us this morning, what do you see? Our usual questions. What is the Spirit speaking to you? You know, we are reading every Sunday. We're reading the Proverbs. Absolutely not supposed to do that. That's way too much reading for one time. You can read it, I know. But you know the purpose of that? So even as we're reading, you'll see things and give the Spirit opportunity to draw your eye to that and to underline that or circle that or, wow, I need to work on that. Whether or not we talk about it through the service, you'll have seen it already in our time of reading the Word. Listen, I hope you listen to me. I want you to. But at the same time, how desperately we need to hear what the Spirit says to us. I might have not spoke to the proverb that caught your eye or your attention this morning. Don't count that as, well, it must not mean very much. No. You take that as incredibly high value because the Spirit has prompted that in your spirit, and you better hold dearly to it and let the Spirit, by His Word, bring change into your life. What's the Spirit say to you? From Proverbs 22 and 23. And here's my specific questions related to the message. Do you need to change the priority? What you have, who you are, and what you're becoming. Are you focused more on the one than the other? Proverbs, wisdom's word. There's nothing more important. Choose a good name. Choose a good reputation. Make sure you prioritize who you are far above and beyond what you have. And then also, because this, I think it probably spoke to my heart the most, do you need to show restraint more and better? The context of Proverbs is related to financial things. Show restraint. But probably it could apply to so much of our lives. Show restraint. Do you need to show restraint more and better in how you talk, in how you respond to people? Are you too inclined to react in anger, respond in anger, say the wrong thing, show restraint? Are you too inclined to give away the secret? Somebody spoke to you in confidence, and now it's like a weight on your shoulders. You're with somebody else, and you know that same person, oh, I've got to tell him. Are you unable to show restraint when it comes to gossip, when it comes to the talking? So much. That we could consider restraint. Wow, how it'll save us from foolishness and its way. And then finally our prayer, God, give us wisdom. Father, so we ask you, give us wisdom.